Conor Benn actually called out Chris Eubank Jr. after Eubank Jr.'s win over the weekend against Liam Williams. Before I dismiss this fight just offhand, I have to harken back to fights such as Amir Khan versus Canelo Alvarez, to fights such as Kell Brook versus Gennady Golovkin, because we didn't think those fights would be possible, particularly Khan versus Canelo. I mean, even early on in Canelo's career, when he was a welterweight, there was some talk about him fighting Chavez Jr. at some stage. And even when he stepped up to 154 pounds, they were still talking about that happening. And I forget exactly the timeline and the chronology when all these things happened. But Chavez Jr., of course, did hold a version of the middleweight title for a while. And he was absolutely massive for the weight. I mean, he was like a borderline cruiserweight fighting at 160 pounds. He was huge at one stage. And at that point, him versus Canelo did not seem realistic at all. But obviously, it's happened since. So I'm hesitant to dismiss the possibility that Conor Benn and Chris Eubank Jr. could actually fight each other, especially bearing in mind that Conor Benn is quite a bit younger than Chris Eubank Jr. Chris Eubank Jr., I think, is what, 32? Something like that, 32, 33. Conor Benn, much younger. And so why I think that has to be considered is because if Chris Eubank Jr. is sufficiently over the hill, then Conor Benn in his prime, and he's not yet in his prime, but once he reaches his prime, it makes a fight between two guys who are so different in size more realistic when one of them is over the hill and the other one's in their prime. Now, in terms of the size difference, I've seen both these guys in person multiple times. Conor Benn is a little guy. I mean, if you see him in person, he's a small, small guy. The first time I saw Chris Eubank Jr. was many years ago at Notting Hill Carnival, and he must be a solid 5'11", 6 foot. Conor Benn, little guy, I don't know what he is, 5'7", 5'8". He's a very small, slender guy. And if you saw them side by, I haven't seen them side by side, but I've seen them on multiple occasions separate from each other. So, but if you did see them side by side, the size difference is massive. Definitely massive. And at this stage, if you were to put them in the ring and allow them to fight, surely Chris Eubank Jr. would win. Conor Benn, of course, is fast. He can move his head and so on. But how would he be able to do what Liam Williams couldn't do and actually get to Chris Eubank Jr.? Remember, he's smaller than Liam Williams. So if Liam Williams, a guy bigger than Conor Benn, can't get to you, and Conor Benn's a small welterweight, by the way. Eubank Jr. is a decent-sized middleweight. I don't want to say he's big. He's a decent-sized middleweight. Conor Benn is a small welterweight. And if a middleweight like Liam Williams wasn't able to successfully walk Eubank Jr. down and get to him, and he was kept on the end of a jab, and he's not as short as Conor Benn, how's Conor Benn supposed to do it? Obviously, Ben has certain things that Liam Williams doesn't have, but overall, I would find it high. You know, I'd be very surprised, let's just put it that way, if Conor Benn were able to beat Chris Eubank Jr. Very, very surprised at this stage. But down the line, if Eubank Jr. is a little over the hill, who knows? And of course, Eubank Jr. says he's open to the Conor Benn fight in future. And why wouldn't he be? Because of the legacies that their fathers both have. Of course, the Benn and the Eubank names are synonymous with each other. So for nostalgia purposes and to rekindle that family rivalry, I can imagine there must be some desire to face each other. And also, of course, lest I forget, there's the monetary aspect, because you got Conor Benn, who seemingly right now isn't willing to face David Avanesian, or at least his team are not willing to put him in the ring against David Avanesian, who's a welterweight like he is, but yet he's talking about fighting a guy who's a middleweight. And you're thinking, okay, how does that make sense? Well, it makes sense financially. It makes sense in terms of family legacy. That's where it makes sense. So it is what it is. A strange fight. I'm not saying that's a fight I want to see straight away. I'm not saying that's a fight that I would rather over Benn versus Avanesian or whoever else at welterweight. No, I'm just saying I understand why both of these guys would be interested in such a fight. And I also understand why the public, to some degree, would be interested in such a fight for nostalgia reasons. Anyway, let me know what you guys think. Any comments below about the prospect of Conor Benn and Chris Eubank Jr. fighting each other. I can see both sides of this argument, to be honest. I know there's a lot of people who think that Eddie Hearn is right to criticize Umar and IFL for asking him probing questions all the time and him being very candid, but they don't do the same with promoters like Frank Warren. They tread on eggshells around him. So I get why Eddie Hearn would be miffed about that. But at the same time, I understand IFL's position, because think about it. Put yourself in their shoes. If you have a business which relies upon access to promoters, fighters, getting to their press conferences and shows and what have you, if you have a business that relies on all that, if you start upsetting people, you're going to get banned from their shows, you're going to get banned from their press conferences, and then your competition is going to be able to take your place at these events. You see it? Frank Warren has been known over the years to ban people from his press conferences. He's been known over the years to get the ump with certain journalists. And of course, he's sued many people, or at least threatened to sue many people in newspapers, etc. So do you as IFL want to put yourselves in that position? Yes, they ask probing questions of Eddie Hearn because Eddie Hearn is open to allow that kind of thing. He's not one of these guys who's going to get you to edit the interview afterwards and change the interview or pull the interview. He has decided that he's going to be very open and accessible. Now, is that because he's just a very open and accessible person by nature? Or is it a strategic thing for PR purposes whereby he's thinking, I need to be different than the old school promoters who were very, I don't want to say authoritarian, but they had a certain way of treating the press and certain way of treating the media, which wasn't necessarily the most accommodating. Eddie Hearn has decided that he's going to be the most accommodating. No publicity is bad publicity. Going on that ethos. Because when Eddie Hearn first went to the United States with DAZN, he was allowing people into his events who were not just critical of him on the internet. They were saying virtually slanderous things about him. But he was happy to let them, well, let me not say happy, but he was letting them into his events, his press conferences and so on. Maybe he felt like he could win them over, where if you say critical things about him, he's not going to ban you from events. He's going to continue letting you in. And maybe these people will learn to appreciate that. You see it? And of course, that brings us back to the current situation where Eddie Hearn, I guess, feels like Umar and Coogan don't appreciate the fact that he's so open because they're not being as critical face-to-face of Frank Warren. So, I don't know. I can see both sides of the argument, because what are IFL supposed to do? Are they supposed to try and talk to Frank Warren the same way they talk to Eddie Hearn and then get denied interviews? At the end of the day, Frank Warren has a certain degree of power in the game. I don't know whether he can stop IFL interviewing all of his fighters, but he might be able to stop them interviewing some of his fighters. Who knows? And I have to imagine he can definitely stop them coming to his events or coming to his press conferences, etc. So what would you do? Like, never mind having a go at IFL and Umar and Coogan. What would you do in their position? You're telling me you would bite the bullet, ask the tough questions to Frank Warren. And to be fair, they did ask questions that Eddie Hearn assumed they didn't ask, right? But perhaps they didn't ask them in a way that they would have asked the questions of Eddie Hearn. Maybe they weren't quite as probing, they weren't quite as assertive with the questions when they asked them to Frank Warren. But what would you do in that position? Would you risk getting banned from his events and not getting access to him and then allowing other people, your competition, to get that access? What would you do in that situation there? Let me know in the comments below. I did find this interview quite interesting because Eddie was a bit spiky with Umar. He said that his interviewing is, did he say not very good? He was quite spiky and Umar was a little taken aback. That's how he sounded to me anyway. He was a little taken aback by how spiky Eddie Hearn was being because he's normally very pally-pally with IFL. And there was even some people in the comment section saying that Eddie Hearn should boycott AFL for a while until they fix up, until they start asking Frank Warren the same kind of questions that they ask him. So, yeah, the only time I can remember Eddie Hearn being somewhat hostile to AFL was many, many years ago. There was an interview that Eddie did with Coogan in the car. They were both in the car, and Eddie was really ripping into Coogan, but this time it weren't even funny. It was like he was being spiteful, and you know, it was quite dark. I have to imagine that was a situation where Eddie was upset about something else going on in his life, perhaps business-wise, and he was taking out on Coogan in that particular moment. Was it something similar here? Is there something behind the scenes that Eddie Hearn is not happy about, and that contributed to the way he was talking to Umar? Now, obviously, I'm sure he's a bit annoyed with AFL anyway, but the way you treat someone you're annoyed with, the hostility, if you want to use that word, you show towards them can be amplified by other things that are going on in your life that you're frustrated about. You see it? So anyway, I found it interesting. I found it entertaining. There's people who have put up scorecards, right? Twitter scorecards. They're saying that Eddie Hearn won by unanimous decision. Other people are saying, nah, Umar actually won it by knockout, or whatever the case. Let me know what you guys think in the comments. Let me know how you scored it. Who got the better of this exchange? Was it Eddie Hearn or was it Umar, AFL Umar? Let me know. Here we go again. We've got Tyson Fury saying some questionable things here. He said, quote, "I think he's a good boxer, a very talented cruiserweight, but I don't think he is no great shake. He's very hittable. He's small. He's light. He's not fast. I think he's something similar to Thomas Adamek. I think he's at that level," unquote. That's Tyson Fury talking about Alexander Usyk. Well, if Alexander Usyk is no better than a Thomas Adamek, which I think is laughable, okay? But if he's no better than a Thomas Adamek, then why did Tyson Fury need a warm-up fight before facing him for the Undisputed World Heavyweight Championship? If he's that, you know, less of a threat, then why a warm-up fight? Because he fought Deontay Wilder in a trilogy fight just a few months ago. Do you really need a warm-up fight before going in there against Usyk? These days, the top fighters fight, what, twice a year? So it would be a fight within 12 months of the Wilder fight if you were to face Usyk next. But Tyson Fury wasn't willing to do that. So I don't believe what Tyson Fury is saying here. I think he's trying to gaslight the public. I think he's trying to diminish the threat of Alexander Usyk. This is something Tyson Fury has done time and time again. And perhaps he's also trying to talk himself confident. I've talked about Tyson Fury's psychology in the past being similar to Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali would always belittle his rivals, his opponents. You would never hear Ali say, oh, this guy's a great fighter and he's amazing and he's dangerous, so I got to be on my game. No, Ali would mock Sonny Liston. He would mock George Foreman, who was wiping people out, who actually beat Ali. Joe Frazier, Ken Norton, both beat Ali. And Ali's there ringside watching George Foreman destroy Ken Norton. And after the fight, when the Colonel Bob Sheridan asks him, well, what happened there? He just wiped out somebody who beat you. And Ali still wouldn't give George Foreman hardly any credit. Was still talking about destroying him and retiring him, despite what he'd just seen. Completely defiant. Tyson Fury is of the same mindset and of the same mentality. He doesn't like giving his opponents credit. Obviously, when he's going in to fight an opponent, he might give them some credit at that stage to try and sell the show. Oh, this guy would destroy Anthony Joshua and he'd destroy Dillon White and he'd destroy everybody else because clearly I'm fighting the best guy in the division, so you guys need to purchase this pay-per-view. Yeah, he'll do that sometimes. But in between fights, he's not very complimentary to pretty much anyone, and you guys have seen that over the years. But at the same time, Tyson Fury is a bit of a master when it comes to PR and manipulating public opinion. he likes to diminish Alexander Usyk, because who's Alexander Usyk fighting next? He's fighting Anthony Joshua. So he wants to control the narrative. He wants to manipulate public perception, whereby they think that he's head and shoulders over even Usyk and AJ. So there isn't as much pressure on him to fight Usyk. You see, this is what both PBC with Team Wilder did, and also Tyson Fury. They created a situation where the public believed that Fury and Wilder were the two best heavyweights, so they didn't put pressure on either of them at a certain stage to fight anyone other than each other. Yeah? So be mindful of that, people, of what Tyson Fury is trying to do here. He openly admitted that Steve Cunningham was the most difficult opponent of his career. A cruiserweight who isn't as, who doesn't have the achievements, who isn't as credentialed as Alexander Usyk, gave him the toughest fight of his career. But yet he's sitting there trying to tell you that Usyk is no better than Thomas Adamek. Give me a break. In the words of Tyson Fury's co-promoter, Frank Warren, do me a favor. Come on. No better than Thomas Adamek. You're having a laugh. He's way better than Thomas Adamek. Way more skilled. Way better achievements. Undisputed cruiserweight champion. Of course, gold medalist in the amateurs. Unified heavyweight champion. Who did Thomas Adamek ever beat? A heavyweight. What? Chris Areola? And you're saying that based upon that, Usyk's no better than... Seriously, people, if you fall for stuff like this, then I got some seafront property in Birmingham to sell you. He's gaslighting you. He must have taken a leaf out of the Potato and a Wigs book in Westminster for gaslighting. Dear, oh dear. Anyway, let me know what you guys think in the comments below about Tyson Fury claiming that Alexander Usyk is no better than Thomas Adamek, when his own promoter, Frank Warren, admitted in this interview that Tyson Fury wanted a tune-up. He didn't want to call it a tune-up, but he admitted that Tyson Fury wanted a fight before facing Alexander Usyk in an undisputed match. And confirming what I suspected, Eddie Hearn said that the reason AJ asked for more money in negotiations to step aside to allow Fury versus Usyk is because Tyson Fury came and said, well, I want a tune-up fight, or I want an interim fight before the Undisputed, which means that AJ would have had to wait even longer. And you're being paid for the amount of time you wait. If you step aside, you're out, okay, I'll step aside, but when am I going to get my shot? You're thinking you're going to get his shot right after he fights Usyk. Yeah, you face the winner. Then all of a sudden, they're telling you, no, Fury's going to have a fight first. Then after that, he'll fight Usyk. And then the winner after that will fight AJ. And AJ, okay, if you want me to wait that long, give me more money. That's reasonable. But again, it's all about PR. And Tyson Fury is the PR king. I don't think anyone has really got the better of him with regards to PR, propaganda. You know, they call it public relations. Read Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda. I don't think anyone's really got the better of Tyson Fury with regards to PR. Even Eddie Hearn, who's good at it himself, isn't quite as good as Fury. And Fury, of course, is in good company when it comes to PR and spin, because Bob Arum in particular is good. Frank Warren, I mean, he's not bad at it, but I don't think he's as good as Bob Arum or even his charge Tyson Fury. So let me know what you guys think in the comments below about Fury's comments here about Usyk. Do you think he has a point? Do you think, like me, it's all bluster? It's him doing what he normally does, trying to control the narrative, and perhaps just diminishing Usyk even in his own mind before he fights him, in the same kind of, using the same psychological tactics that Muhammad Ali used to use. Talking himself confident. Defeating his opponent in his own mind before he faces him in the ring. Let me know in the comments below.